Time to talk some Major League Baseball right now as we're joined on the G&M Family Market phone line by our friend Evan Davis. You see his work, Fan Rag, Hardball Times, occasionally as well on the Major League Baseball, the MLB Network, and a regular in baseball season with us. Evan, welcome back to the program.
Always a pleasure, Rich.
Before we talk Major League Baseball, I want to touch on minor league ball and a very special guest at the Portland Sea Dogs game yesterday. Tell us about what your mom got to do.
Well, that's right. Yesterday was my mom's 61st birthday. So a bunch of coworkers and her went out to the game, and they surprised her with honoring her as to throw out the ceremonial first pitch, which I didn't know about and she didn't know about until 30 minutes before it happened. But apparently she was able to at least get it over the plate, didn't embarrass herself too much, and then she had a wonderful time, which I think was maybe the best birthday present she could have gotten yesterday.
Well, that's fantastic. And based on what we saw over the weekend, you know, maybe the Sox could use another arm out there, because it was a it was a rough weekend for the Red Sox, swept in Baltimore, getting clobbered the first couple of nights, and now have lost four in a row for I think only the second time this year. Is this just a bump in the road for this team?
You have to think so. I mean, yeah, it's not been a good week. It's not been a good couple of weeks when all is said and done. I actually, funny, I wrote an article for FanRag about Chris Sale and how the Yankees did attack him in a start that he was about to make against them. And they touched him up for a couple of home runs. So I guess they must have been reading my scouting report. No, I think it's just a little blip. Even despite their struggles, Mitch Moreland, Xander Bogaerts, and even Christian Vasquez have been swinging the bat pretty well. Jackie Bradley before he had the thumb injury. Doug Fister has been a mixed bag, but he's like turned in a couple of pretty serviceable starts. And then, you know, with regard to that game on Friday, I don't really know how you explain that other than just weird baseball happening. Rick Porcello, I think, gave up 11 earned runs in the limited action he saw, but only four of them were earned. I think five errors were committed by the Sox in that game. And that's not typical. I mean, they're, depending on what metric you look at, the Sox defense is probably somewhere between okay and excellent. So that seems a little unusual. I think that they, you know, they're still 2.5 games up on the Yankees in the division. Their odds of winning the division are anywhere between 61 and 82%, depending on what playoff odds model you're looking at. Bradley and Eduardo Nunez are probably both going to come back pretty soon. Yeah, I think it's just been a little rough patch that happens to coincide with the fact that the Yankees are playing really good baseball again. The AL East was always going to be a dogfight ever since the Yankees decided they were going to be serious this season. But I think in the long run, the Sox are going to hold on. They're going to pull it out.
Well, Yankees having some problems of their own as well. And you wrote about the struggles that Aroldis Chapman has been having lately. And how do you analyze that?
I want to say it's the nagging shoulder issue. He had rotator cuff problems earlier in the season. But it is odd. You know, his fastball velocity has lost about 3 miles per hour over the course of the year. Now, when Aroldis Chapman loses 3 miles per hour of his fastball, he's still averaging in the triple digits. So it's not as if he's a lost cause. But you know, guys are hitting his breaking ball, and he's, you know, never exactly a command artist, but doesn't seem to have a whole great deal of control of the strike zone at the moment. It's just exacerbated by the fact that he's blown a couple of really big saves in really high leverage moments recently. So it always looks worse when a reliever does that, because they have such limited playing time that every outing counts, especially in a high leverage moment. But at the same time, I wouldn't have argued against dropping him out of the ninth inning anyway, especially after the David Robertson and Tommy Kahnle trades, because they have been the better relievers over the course of the year. And you have a lot more flexibility with those two guys. You know, Chapman notoriously likes to just pitch the ninth inning. But for somebody like him, you know, still not yet 30 years old, to be as dominant as he's been over the last couple of years, to see something like this happen, especially when it was such a precipitous velocity drop like that, you have to think it's an injury, especially since he was dealing with a shoulder problem earlier in the year.
We're talking with Evan Davis here on Downtown. Well, it's either parity or mediocrity, but when you look around the American League, it's about eight teams at least still involved in the hunt for those two wild card spots. Who do you think we end up seeing capturing those two playoff berths?
I definitely lean towards mediocrity in this conversation. You know, the Yankees are locked up, I think, for the first spot. As for the second spot, I think that one of six teams has been the front runner almost daily for the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks. It's really hard to keep up. Nobody seems to want to pull away from the pack. Nobody seems to be all that convincing in the way that they are playing. You can't even really point to any one team as one who are just digging down deep and, you know, finding it in their hearts to win, you know, leaning on each other and their team chemistry, you know, the usual kind of like old school baseball style of thinking. Just nobody's playing well. And right now the Twins are in the pole position for that second spot. And they've been the luckiest team in baseball. Now, granted, like, they've actually been playing legitimately well over the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. They seem to have all of a sudden figured out how to, you know, control the strike zone, at least their hitters have. Their plate discipline has gone through the roof. Byron Buxton hit 3 home runs the other day, which is completely mind-blowing to think about. But at the same time, the Royals and the Angels and the Mariners are all 1 or 2 games back of them.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow the Orioles and the Rangers are still in this conversation, which is crazy. The Orioles have, you know, if the Cincinnati Reds didn't exist, the Orioles would have the worst starting rotation in the sport, and yet they seem to continue winning, as Buck Showalter teams always manage to do. Same thing with Jeff Banister teams. The Rangers always seem to punch above their weight, and they're not exactly playing great baseball, but nobody wants to grab this thing by the scruff of the neck and go with it. I don't know really how to explain it. I think we always knew that this was probably going to happen, but the extent to which that, like, half of these teams who are contenders aren't even at 500 at the moment is perplexing. So if you want me to make a prediction, I would never dare to try and do that because my prediction would change the next day. It's really, really strange.
Home runs are up the last couple of years all over the game, but nobody's swinging the kind of bat that Giancarlo Stanton has been swinging lately. 50 home runs with more than a month left to play. We're looking at, 73 is the record, and we had all those steroid-aided years with homers in the 60s. But still, if he can get to 60 home runs, that's a remarkable accomplishment.
You hit the nail on the head. Now, you mentioned that home runs are up all over baseball. It's been the case for the last 2 years that we're in the middle of a home run explosion, most likely because Major League Baseball lowered the seams on the baseball. That is going to cause less drag as the ball travels through the air. In other words, we're dealing with a juice baseball here. However, Roger Maris hit 61 in an expansion year. Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds did their things during the PED era. Even Babe Ruth, you know, had a short porch out to right field. Like, every single big home run season has some sort of caveat attached to it. But think about this. Stanton has hit 50 home runs through 129 games. He's only the sixth player to ever do that. He's on pace for 63 dingers. That would be the sixth highest single-season home run total in baseball history. And it's at a time when offense, besides the home run, has been down. You know, we saw offense hit like an all-time low, at least in the modern age, back in 2014. And that might have helped influence juicing the baseball a little bit. So when guys are striking out left and right and making less and less contact than they ever have before, 50 home runs really, really stands out. And that is only the beginning of what an amazing thing Stanton has been doing this year. I think I'm not the only one to have taken him for granted a little bit over the last 2 or 3 seasons because he's dealt with injuries. He had kind of a down year last year. Aaron Judge happened. So, you know, the big burly guy who hits the ball harder than anyone else was replaced by an even bigger, even burlier guy who hits the ball even harder than him. But Judge has faded down the stretch. He might be dealing with a shoulder problem. We don't know. And Stanton just keeps on grinding it out. And his walk rate is the highest it's been in 3 years. His strikeout rate is at a career low. His contact rate is an all-time high. If you look at just the exit velocity and launch angle where he hits the ball, he's hitting the ball in all of the ideal launch angles for him to get it out of the park. He's just a remarkable guy. I mean, right now I think he's the front runner for the NL MVP. It's just been a really jaw-dropping thing to watch, especially in the second half of the year.
All right, away from baseball, before we let you go, Evan, Taylor Swift dropped the video, the new one, the album Reputation, coming out later in the fall. But Look What You Made Me Do has come out. And so I ask you, as a critic of all things out there, has she gone too far? Is this just being petty? Is it the time for T-Swift to stop pointing fingers at people?
Well, Rich, I don't know if you're a big T-Swift fan. I kind of jumped off the boat back in 2010 when she, subtweeted Kanye West in the song Innocence, and I feel like it's just been kind of downhill from there. She's a weird one. Like, I don't know how you could be so tone deaf by making it appear as though you are the most savvy, media savvy and self-aware person on the planet. Like, listening to that song and watching that video just really kind of stank of desperation. She thinks that she is able to, answer the critics and the haters with really sweet takedowns one after the other and show that she can, like, poke some fun at herself and at her own personas. But I don't know. When the closing line of your opening hit single is, the old Taylor can't come to the phone. Why? Because she's dead. you're pushing yourself too hard. But it doesn't seem to matter. She's breaking streaming records all over the place. The record will probably sell 10 million copies. Her bottom line ain't hurting. But I think her reputation started to really take a turn when she was dealing with a lot of overexposure during the last big world tour, and then the little fight with Kanye West last year when Life of Pablo came out. And I don't think that she knows how to handle people not liking her. And so this is her way of believing she can get people back on her side. I don't really know if it's going to work.
I'm with you on that. And I'm now officially on Katy Perry's side in this battle.
Well, man, I don't think we have time to get into swish.
That'll be next time you're on. Hey, Evan, always great talk with you. Thanks for making time for us.
Absolutely, Rich. Thanks a lot.
We'll do it again soon. It's Evan Davis, Fan Rag, Hardball Times here on Downtown.